This is The Pulse. I'm Bharati Jagdish. Now, today, with one player exiting but more entering the ride-hailing market, will consumers benefit or, in fact, lose out? And is there really room for so many players? To talk about this, I have with me advisor to the National Taxi Association and the National Private Hire Vehicles Association, Member of Parliament Ang Hin Kee, and transport researcher Dr. Walter Tissera from the Singapore University of Social Sciences. Now, you would have heard in the news that Uber is due to terminate operations here next week, but two more ride-hailing apps have entered the market, RideX and Jugnu, and we're also hearing that Gojek might be entering the market. I think a lot of people are saying, great, this will be great for competition. Consumers will definitely benefit from this. But the big question is there really room for more players? We have to note that three other players entered the market in 2013 and 2014, but they exited in 2016. And Uber will be exiting soon as well. So really, is there any point in having all these people enter today? Mr. Ang, maybe we could start with you.
If we take ourselves back maybe about 4 or 5 years ago, you have Halo, you have Easy Taxi, you have Kahoo, and now you have Uber exiting the scene. Basically, I think it's market competition at work. If you are efficient, you are able to attract consumers and you have enough driver pool with you, you will be able to continue to sustain yourself in the business. Then if you exit and competitors feel that they have a better product, they can fill the gap and not let, say, the incumbents such as Grab have a monopolistic hold over the market, they will come to our local market to at least demonstrate to the local consumer how is it that they can be a better offering. So I think this will continue on. It is not going to stop. We have recently met with Gojek and with RideX over the last 1 week. They all have very ambitious plans. They feel that the local scene can have a shake-up with the type of product that they offer. That will be different from Grab.
What are the distinctive qualities when it comes to RideX and Gojek, for instance?
Well, RideX feel that they are not an international company like Uber with a management team that packed up and leave. They feel that they have a lot of stake locally. They understand the local market. They understand the dynamics of how our commuters will operate with a new offering. So they feel that they have a good product. I think Gojek side, a lot of the notion came from the fact that they are tried and tested a product in Indonesia. A wide variety of services ranging from delivery of goods, delivery of concierge services. If you want movie tickets and you don't want to queue up, or you want your bak kwa over the Chinese New Year and you need somebody to do that for you, they provide that service.
I'm sure lots of people would sign up for that service. But
Especially during Chinese New Year, we've got to spend 3 hours there. But
it really depends on the price point as well, isn't it?
Price point is one, but I think we start to have to understand that it's not per service. It could be a bundled service. I could buy all your services, ranging from your payment platform to your food delivery to your transport option. So increasingly, we may see these guys coming on board to offer a suite of services rather than just point-to-point ride service.
What do you think, Walter? These players who are now entering the market, can we expect them to be distinct from all the others who've come in and left?
I think if you look at the players which have come in and left over the last few years, the thing they tend to have in common is that they were relatively underfunded in Singapore compared to their main competitors. And I think the reason why funding is so important is none of these businesses actually work without having a large network. You need a large number of drivers and passengers in your platform in order to be able to provide a core service well, which is, you know, matching a driver and a passenger. And if you can't get the large network, basically it doesn't really matter how innovative your basic product is. It's unlikely that drivers or passengers are going to jump ship to you.
Yeah. Let's talk about the strategies that some of the players had used in order to get the large network and market share. A lot of it had to do with price.
Exactly.
And we know now that that is not sustainable. With Uber leaving and saying that, you know, there's really no point staying on anymore. The business is still not profitable and the funding is running out. And with Grab, some people have noticed in the last few weeks that there have been fewer promo codes issued. It's not as sweet as before when it comes to pricing.
No, that's definitely true. It's obvious that Grab and Uber, the way they used their funding was basically to buy business, right? They heavily incentivized drivers to drive for them. They gave away subsidies to passengers to get you to move to their app. So that's how they built their large network position. But what both companies were betting on, basically, is that in the long run, when they consolidated their large market position, they'd be able to operate efficiently enough that they could basically offer lower prices, or at least similar prices to what they had before. That's basically the bet that they had. For example, the way this could come about basically is through enhancing driver utilization. I mean, in the traditional taxi network, your driver in some cases could only be having a passenger in their car maybe only about half the time, or a bit more than half. But in ride-hailing networks, when you have sufficient density, you can actually boost it up by 10, 20%, 30% or more, which means that effectively you can promise a driver similar or better earnings per hour, but in exchange for lower fares. That's what they're basically hoping for, to get some efficiency out of having a larger density of network.
So prices could actually not shoot up as much as some expect them to.
Prices don't need to go up if you can actually match drivers to passengers so efficiently that basically dead time is reduced to the minimum. And that's what they're betting on.
I think in the industry, they call that pick and go. There's little empty cruising moments, because empty cruising, wandering around or waiting for a customer, is such that in this industry, it is opportunity loss. But I think this whole thing about promo code and rewards is something not new. We have seen this from the telco industry. When a new telco come in, they will promise you promotion that is unbelievable, cheaper than what you have. Then later they will consolidate and say that, apart from telco, how about your phone at home? How about your Wi-Fi? How about your TV streaming, online subscription? Then they will start to consolidate and
But of course, consumers being consumers are also unhappy when sometimes they end up paying more than before.
Similarly,
and then they'll say, oh, you reeled me in with a promo, but
So recently, when we have an introduction of a new telco, everybody is looking forward to that, because in order to grab a share of the market, you do need to draw customers from the incumbent. So likewise, we have Juknu, Gojek, RideX. Everybody's hoping either you provide some form of promotion, or in the case of Grab, I understand they are moving towards a reward system. So rather than a one-off promotion, be a loyal customer, use us often, and these are rewards that you can redeem for your food, for your transport, for other services that they offer. So incumbent will gradually move to rewards, whereas new competitors will try a promo approach to seize the market and get hold of more commuters and drivers.
Whatever the case, you know, the sustainable solution at the end of the day mustn't also amount to having consumers swallow bitter pills, you know, that after all this time of spoiling me, now you're telling me it's going to be much higher. So I guess what Walter mentioned earlier about them being smarter about making their pricing models more sustainable needs to kick in at some point.
I mean, absolutely. I think actually what Mr. Ang pointed out about how Grab and the other companies are moving towards diversified product offering is very important, because it highlights you don't need to make your money necessarily from the original product, which is basically ride-hailing and matching. You could very well in the future, for Grab for example, make your money off GrabPay, which is obviously the longer run business plan they have, or through integrating the Grab service into offering you all kinds of other services, which is the same thing that I understand Gojek is doing in Indonesia.
So you mentioned a few days ago, Walter, that you think the only real formidable competition here to the incumbent, which is Grab, is Gojek. Why?
Because Gojek is the only potential competitor which is well known to have a large amount of funding backing it, and which actually has a very good track record of success in the local region. Unfortunately, I think for the other competitors which have been announced recently, they don't appear to have that kind of funding depth or the existing operational expertise. And that's something I think we need to be aware of, which is that it's not easy to scale up to the level where you can be, you could say, a real competitor in the market. without both the money and the expertise. Even Grab today, for example, people are nowadays complaining a bit about how they feel that they perceive that the operations quality is not as good as Uber used to be, for example. But that highlights even a large market player with lots of funding may not necessarily always deliver a high quality service. So what more, a small entrant without much funding? I think we have, you know, I think that's the issue they're going to face.
But let's not also forget the fact that the taxi operators are still in play.
Yes, I was about to come to that.
So with the taxi operators in play, A, they could all reinvent themselves and say that I'm also capable of doing similar services like what the apps company do. Or B, they could work with some of the apps company and say that, look, we are now a consortium of services. We can offer what, say, Grab or Gojek can do and mount a comeback and say that, look, I've been in this industry for a long time. I know the market. I have a fleet of vehicle under me. And so I'm going to sort of walk away from my traditional mode of operation and the way I used to make money and say that, look, I look at how the competitors have shaped up. And I think there is a chance for me to come in and not be a leasing company, not be a hiring company, but be a service provider for commuters, whether it comes to point-to-point transport, delivery of goods, fulfillment of logistic needs, your shopping online experience, and even concierge services.
You have been in contact with a lot of taxi drivers, and I'm sure the taxi operators as well. Do you feel they are inclined to think of some more creative ways of rejigging that business model?
I think during this May Day, Prime Minister highlighted how taxi drivers have already started to look at digital disruption as a part and parcel of working with it rather than working against it. And hence, many are getting more familiar how to extract economic value from digital disruption. So kudos to the effort from the drivers. But for the taxi operators, just having a department and hiring people to come and drive online business is probably not going to shape how you become a serious competitor. You really have to get the best in class as far as online and apps coming on board. Organically trying to grow from within or hire a team to slowly grow that product, you may be a bit slower compared to people whose inherent technical skills is in trying to deliver better apps, better services, better vertical integration. So a horizontal player will need to reinvent themselves and therefore take a serious look at how can I start to become also a vertical player in this industry.
Walter, your take on the impact on the taxi industry?
I think the unfortunate reality is that when you look at the last few years, the taxi operators look as if they've been caught flat-footed by the rapid rise of first third-party taxi booking apps and then after that, ride-hailing. Mm. Of course, a part of that is due to the fact that the regulatory context they operate under is a bit different from ride-hailing. But, you know, when it comes to technology, you have seen that the taxi operators, after a point, decided that it was not their core business to develop the app or to develop the technology, and instead, all of them one by one started lining up with basically, you know, a third-party app.
Yeah.
So most of the smaller operators went with Grab, and Comfort for a time tried to go alone. Comfort also tried from time to time to tie up with smaller, newer entrants, and eventually you can see that they decided just to go with Uber. But when you look at the deal that they were going to strike with Uber, of course, before the Grab-Uber merger, you can see that Comfort was clearly going to turn into more or less a leasing company, and they weren't really going to have a technological stake, I believe, in the business. And I think that's the problem, because we can talk about the fact that the businesses need to adapt, of course, to the disruptive economy, but for whatever reason, they don't appear to have a strong interest in actually putting the resources needed to actually innovate in this era.
Mr. Ang, is that true? You think they're not as committed as they should be?
I think strategically, businesses will be compelled to look at the evolving market scene like the way DBS look at things. Today, DBS is no longer your brick and mortar and let's have how many branches, how many counters, etc. But a lot of it is online. Whether you transact locally, overseas, you do payment, you do transaction, you do loan, you do various assessment of to your mortgage deals, etc. You do it online. So it's a major shift. And that major shift requires you to reinvent your people in your organization, get them the right training, get the right team of people on board, so that when you do this strategic move, it's not just a department, not just a business unit, but you need to shift the entire organization to ride this technological disruption. So I think the taxi operators, some of them do have that capacity to do that, and they have shown that they do have the financial means to do that, because some are acquiring assets overseas to diversify the way they make their income. But in the longer term, I think many are seriously looking into how do I become a vertical integrator and ride this technological disruption in a manner that the banks have already made a major shift in.
Speaking about the issue from the man in the street perspective, I still hear a lot of taxi drivers saying that the government should ban all these private hire car services and ride-hailing apps. That sentiment still exists on the ground.
Well, you know, under the regulatory framework we have in Singapore today, somebody who has a taxi vocational license can always choose the next day to switch to driving for private hire. The reverse is not true. The private hire driver's license doesn't allow you to switch. So, in fact, for I think some taxi drivers at least, they have seen that, you know, if you can't beat them, join them. So they basically switch to driving private hire because they perceive the earnings are larger. So I suppose that the main concern would be among taxi drivers who, for whatever reason, do not want to switch, even if they believe that, you know, private hire drivers are having a better time of it. There could be many reasons why they don't want to switch. Perhaps, for example, they have difficulty adapting to the new technology. They prefer to do street hails and so on. And there's no question that the street hail market has been hit very badly because now a lot of people just turn to the app first instead of waiting by the street.
Yeah.
So I accept that there are those consequences for the taxi market. But overall, I don't think it's all negative, because first, you can always leave. And second, taxi companies have had to increase their offerings and sweeten the offerings to taxi drivers to get them to still hire their vehicles. So it's not been all bad for taxi drivers.
You mentioned the regulatory framework several times. I know, Mr. Ang, there were a lot of disputes over the unlevel playing field between the taxi drivers and the private hire car drivers. Some changes have been made in that regard. Are taxi drivers okay with the way things are now? Is the playing field level enough for them?
You know, Singapore is a very unique location. Of the many counterparts I have overseas, many have asked me as to how our regulatory framework catching up with technological digital disruption in the transport scene. Because many are trying to grapple, what do I do with these things? So you saw in our neighbouring country that even that topic of ride-hailing and taxi became one of the hot potato issue as to how do you resolve this. Certain countries try to enact legislation ahead of time and say you can do this and not do that. At the end of the day, how do our commuters benefit? Do you create a venue that new technological innovation will come to Singapore and use it as a hub? Do you bring new technology to our local market? I think we have seen it, how our commuters' base have increased from, you know, previously taxi had 1 million trips a day. Today, you have close to 2 million. Now, where does this 2 million trip come from? Many may have switched from private car to taking point-to-point ride services. Many may have said, hey, short distance, could I just take one of these ride services? So,
also, because the ride services are cheaper than what taxis used to be. So I think we have had a lot of people now say, oh, I can finally afford to take a private hire car service sometimes instead of taking the train or the bus.
So we go back to the earlier point, some of these promotion and availability of supply, convenience to price according to my demand. So if I'm not in a big rush and I don't mind sharing a vehicle with a stranger, I can go on a pull, a hitch, I can take a search if I'm in a big rush, or I can choose different options. So the key thing is, like what Walter mentioned earlier, do the drivers have choice? Mobility and portability between different operators, different types. Do the consumer have choice? And if the operators are able to deliver that, so whether it's apps or taxi, keep getting our scene competitive, then we have to accept the fact that this will always be a flux. New player coming in, incumbent being challenged, revisiting their business model. This is almost going to happen on a most regular basis. Yes, it will disrupt what we are used to, and, you know, can it be stabilized? Can I get used to a fixed pattern? But a fixed pattern may not give you the best deal. So a dynamic pattern may give you the best deal.
We did mention, even before we went on air, that we should expect to see this type of a cycle quite often, where a player leaves and then a few more will come in and there'll be another fight for the pie. It sounds like it's all good. This will all be very, very positive for the consumer. But are there any downsides, Walter?
I think even if you take away, for example, all the subsidies and incentives, I think overall the introduction of ride hailing has been good for the commuter and for drivers and people who want to be drivers, precisely because it's given us a lot more options. It's given us new ways of, for example, arranging personal transport, and that has been value generating. But in the long run, I do agree that there is some concern about whether this kind of cycle of disruption is creates winners and losers, right? So, for example, if you look at taxi drivers, I could say that perhaps the so-called losers among taxi drivers would probably be those who can't use apps, can't figure out how to use apps, who rely on street hail and so on. Those guys are almost certainly, I think, suffering some reduction in income because they cannot adapt to how most people nowadays want to actually arrange and book their travel. Of course, if you look at the shareholders of traditional taxi companies, they have suffered to some extent, depending on how adept the company has been in, you know, and in managing this transition. So I think the you know, technological disruption does create winners and losers. But overall, I do believe it's been good for Singapore, even if you were to subtract away all of the subsidies and incentives.
Anything to
add?
In
the long term, I think one concern will be how will a wider network of train lines, train station, more buses, and of course, AV. Autonomous vehicle come into play. Do we therefore need so many drivers to be on full time? Yeah. Do we need so many young drivers to be full time doing this business? The older drivers are looking at it and say, well, in another 5 to 10 years' time, I might already retire from the scene and become a commuter instead of a driver. But the younger ones, your late 20s, early 30s, in the next 20, 30 years, with a wider transport network that are driven by trains and buses, and your AV probably will require us to consolidate some of these chauffeured ride service. It's no longer automated ride service, but a chauffeured ride service. So you will see a consolidation in terms of full-time job opportunities for drivers. But if it's part-time, I think there's still opportunity for that flexibility.
Players will have to reconfigure their operations in order to deal with those changes as well as we
Well,
go
the
along.
Operators, whether taxi or private hire, yeah. Look forward to AV because it's 24 hours. It is you reduce a huge chunk of the cost. So ride services might even get cheaper because my operating costs will be lower. And if I use a electric vehicle, the parts and the components and the breakdown and the cost of running it may even be cheaper. So it's not all doom and gloom if all the technology and all the business model can fall in place. I think the public transport network is in for a very exciting time over the next few years.
Because the network is growing, but we also need to see greater efficiency as well, I think, before that takes off. Many thanks to both of you for joining me today. Dr. Walter Tessera from the Singapore University of Social Sciences and Member of Parliament Ang Hin Kee, who is also advisor to the National Taxi Association and the National Private Hire Vehicles Association. You've been listening to The Pulse. Thanks for joining us.